Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Before we jump in, I want to tell you about New York Times Audio, a new iOS app for New York Times News subscribers. It's got our show, plus all the other podcasts from The Athletic, exclusive shows, narrated articles, and more. New York Times Audio. Download it now at nytimes.com/audio app. Welcome, everybody, to the Football GM Podcast. Mike Sando of The Athletic here, along with the GM. Randy, where are we catching up with you this week?
I am in Idaho currently, kind of getting a little R&R, but at the same time, doing plenty of work for The Athletic now that you've roped me into the full-time Athletic gig. So,
yeah, well, R&R stands for research, and what's the other one? Yeah, research for the podcast, which we've been doing. We've actually have more stuff to talk about this week than you might think for a June 7th, or is when we're recording, to go live on June 8th. With some moves around the league. But Randy, the thing that stole the show yesterday was, or in this week, was a situation in golf. And we're not a golf podcast, so we're not going to be talking about, you know, birdies and eagles. But I do think there's some applications for NFL and sports in general. In fact, just to summarize it quickly, you know, the PGA Tour for the last few years has been holding off the Saudi-backed Live Tour and criticizing them and calling into question the morality of entering into business with this Saudi tour based on human rights violations, based on 9/11, obviously. And yet a lot of high profile players from the PGA Tour have jumped to the Live Tour for a ton of money. And so after all this years and years of the PGA Tour saying, you know, how could anybody even stomach going to Live, they've basically sold out to Live, for lack of a better term, and are in business with them. And so one of the things we've seen, Randy, is people saying, hey, wow, the Saudis with the limited, unlimited cash, they could buy an NFL team. And I go, whoa, wait a minute. You think these guys are going to try to buy a team so they can get on the competition committee? You know, maybe affect the kickoff rule? I think we're thinking way bigger than that, don't you?
Well, I would tend to agree, Mike. I don't think, to answer your question specifically, they can't buy an NFL team because it's a club, and they would get voted out for whatever reason. And not the highest bidder gets in all the time.
You believe that, though? What if they offered $20 billion? You think they wouldn't?
No chance. No chance. Okay. I don't think the league would ever let them in. I just think it's a far-fetched example of what's right and wrong, and I think the league would steer clear of it. It's just too controversial right now. I think that's what makes the Live partnership with the PGA now is the fact that, yeah, maybe it makes sense on paper, but we'll see if it makes sense off paper and in society, and how is it going to be covered. I guess my first inclination was, this is awesome for golf, everybody back together, but the more you piece together the construction of the partnership, I'm not sure. I mean, time will tell.
What if there's some kind of international incident or event where they've, you know, done something that's deeply offensive to the United States, and now you're does the PGA Tour have to put out a statement? That was that. But what I thought of was what I really thought of was not buying into the league. What's to stop, if money's no object, what's to stop just starting a league? Because you've been in the NFL for a lot of years, but when you were, you know, we look at the USFL, or you look at the AFL, or you look at the XFL, the AAFL. For the most part, they ran out of money. I mean, that's right. The main issue. But could you imagine if a league were started up with unlimited funds under the auspices of not, hey, we need return on investment for our money, more we want relevance and we want a foothold in America in a really popular sport. What would happen, Randy, if a league was started up And they just said, hey, you know what? Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are coming up. How about 4 years and $2 billion each? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Mahomes, would you play for $5 billion? I mean, just ridiculous amounts of money that we're not used to talking about, because our minds are in the framework of a CBA and, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. And the league, look out, Roger Goodell might fine you, you know, this type of stuff. That's not the world that we're talking about. Right. We'd be talking about a whole other entity. If that were to happen, players would go, right? Just like in golf.
Yeah, the concept is a little bit startling. And you're right. Why not take the country's, you know, number one money-making machine, right, in sports, and do something about it. It's really no different than the original USFL, in my mind, in 1983, mm-hmm. when they signed the stars of the league and college kids who were projected to go really high, whether it was, you know, Herschel Walker, Steve Young, Jim Kelly, Reggie White. These were players that became Hall of Fame football players. So they weren't picking off the bottom of the rosters like some of the spring leagues have. These are giant names in the business. And you brought up the CBA part. What if the CBA existed and it was in favor of the players and all the other things that the players wish for? That's really what got the golfers to go to live, right? It was all the other things as well. It was a bigger piece of the pie. It was all of that stuff. And it could be you know, something like that, and we're just sitting here surmising, but it's not far-fetched. It's not as far-fetched as you think, if indeed the printing of money is not an object. That's the bottom line, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I could even believe, you know, the Jay Monahan, the head of the PGA Tour, is, I think, rightfully under fire and being called a hypocrite, this or that. Mm-hmm. But I think he was probably leveraged into this position. I mean, he could have genuinely felt in the early stages that this is an affront, and that there's no way we would want to enter into some sort of a thing with the Saudis. And yet, once there was enough leverage going the other way, suddenly you're doing the very deal that you said you didn't want to do. And I was just struck with Bryson DeChambeau, one of the top golfers who's on LIV. He's on CNN this week justifying it, talking about forgiveness for 9/11. And these guys are all about peace and love, about a better world. You know, and the host having to come back and say, you know, wait a minute, they just murdered a journalist from the Washington Post, right? You good with that? And so I think it's just fascinating to me how quickly that turned. And like you had said, hey, the league would resist them buying a team. But if you have a league, you could suddenly be in a totally different situation where I don't think Roger Goodell would be any different than Jay Monahan, right? If the financial interests of the long-term interests of the league suddenly were twisted that way, what are you going to do?
Well, I think it's definitely a different game when you're talking about what really was a hostile takeover, right? I mean, that's really what it was, and what an assault on the NFL would be, a starting of another league with unlimited budget. I mean, if you could identify the right players in the right situation, then it becomes something that people will pay to watch on TV. And I think that's probably where LIV fell short, is that they did get some good players, but the popularity of NFL stars is at another level above where the PGA players are. And then you start to pick off the core players of NFL teams. You're probably, you know, again, it's if money is unlimited, that's kind of the idea, that the only way it would work is if you just were, like you said, not wanting to balance the books per se, at least in the first few years, and just wanted to kind of start your own league. I'm not going to say it's impossible, that's for sure. I think a lot of courtroom battles would ensue. Obviously, a TV deal would have to follow, but it's not as crazy as it sounds because players, you know, they defected for issues and other things that were going on. And if a new league offered them answers to all these things, not only the billions like you talked about, but everything else, you'd probably get your fair share of players to jump ship.
It's just a fascinating thing because, you know, 5, 10 years ago, if you, not that I'm some sort of golf expert, but 10 years ago, I can't imagine that people were talking about this sort of thing could happen. Yep. You just would never think of it in 100 years, especially go back 20 years ago. We're coming right out of 9/11. You'd say, there's no way this sort of thing could happen. And here we are. So that was just kind of a thought exercise for me. It was like we sort of would think, no way. Or our first thought might be, well, could they go after a team? I just think you have to think bigger than that, you know?
I agree with you. I think there are mechanisms in place that would really give a lot of pushback for a smaller scale team takeover, like you said. But when you start talking about a whole new league and operating on totally different grounds where you don't need, in this case, you wouldn't need the NFL's approval or anybody else's.
No.
That's scary money. Now, having said that, it is a giant step, probably times 10, to run a professional football league as opposed to talk some individual golfers into jumping ship. It's a total different budgetary, you know.
Organizational. Logistics.
Right. Logistics, the whole thing. Yeah, hey, ask one of these spring team league owners and see how much it costs. But again, you have to assume if money's no object, then I guess anything's possible. You know?
And what you do then too is you would hire, you would pay a ton of money for either someone who's recently retired from a top executive role at the league office, or you'd get people in who know what they're doing, right?
Yeah, just you'd find your Greg Norman or something like that to identify talent, and
the XFL or these other leagues. You were hired as someone who knows what he's doing in personnel, or Bill Polian's been brought in on certain things. There's people like that around who do know what they're doing and could do it. So, and then there's people that are at teams now, or former GMs who are now national scouts somewhere or whatever. There's plenty of people that if it was presented in the right way with the biggest amount of, the amount of dollar signs, the right amount of zeros on there would be tempting for anybody, you know? And so I think in defense of some of these live guys, it's like, it's really easy to say you would never do something until that check's sitting there for $500 million. And that's not a choice that most of us have. But if you did, it would be very difficult to walk away from it, as we've seen.
Right. So no, I agree. Interesting concept, that's for sure. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, so more the money of sports, the money of gambling is in the news this week, with obviously NFL players and officials, for that matter, being strictly prohibited from gambling on the league. The Colts' Isaiah Rodgers is the most recent player in trouble on that front. Meanwhile, of course, the league's in all these partnerships with gambling companies. And did you see the story about Bill Belichick, like, really going hard on his team about, you know, the do's and don'ts of this? It seems like a potential fire here that could get out of control, doesn't it?
Well, I thought it from the get-go. When they got in bed with the gambling aspect of this, you knew some things like this were going to come up. I think it's, and again, my 35 years or so in the league, there was, at least in my opinion, plenty of dialogue between front offices, between coaches, players. Everybody knew gambling was taboo. There were, yeah. And you know, you've been in a million NFL locker rooms too. There were signs on the wall. There's signs everywhere saying, hey, you can do this, you can't do that. I thought it was a clear message that you had to stay away from any of this stuff. In fact, I think my contract for years it had a paragraph in there stipulating that it wasn't just NFL betting. You couldn't even bet. You couldn't even go to the horse track, you know, legally or do any of this stuff. And we all have seen what gambling has become. So I figured the education of everybody involved was going to have to take to the next level. And I don't know that that ever happened. Obviously, some of the players didn't get the memo, but it's going to be an ongoing education, and that it's a slippery slope, I'm telling you, on how to govern and how to communicate with everybody involved at the team level, because they're the ones that affect these games. And when you start, you know, the integrity of the game is always been the number one issue, that whether Roger was the commissioner or Paul Tagliabue was the commissioner or Gene Upshaw was the CBA president, it was always first and foremost was the integrity of the game. And when you introduce this kind of partnership with an entity whose agenda is totally different than what you've done for 100 years in the NFL, you figured there's going to be some cracks. And we, as we found, some players have slipped through the cracks and said they aren't aware and didn't know, and now they're paying the price.
To me, it's the same thing as the PGA situation, where the PGA, for like I said, for those years, we would never enter, you know, the Saudis, forget about it. And then when the money's enough, you know, it's okay. The league for years, my gosh, gambling, no, scourge of the league, can't be associated with it at all. Wait a minute, there's a profit thing here, and this is the way society is going. Yep, let's do it. We're not morally opposed at all. We'll take the money and run with it. And now they're going to have to deal with, I would think of maybe in the future, another level of sophistication too, as players maybe find ways around it. Cause I think they'll still enjoy, people will enjoy to gamble, and it's easy to gamble. Maybe there'll be ways they can do it through a relative or a friend or a different account. But I think it's just going to be here to stay.
Oh, I think it's here to stay. The cat's out of the bag. And when you start talking about certain people's paychecks being reflective of gambling revenues that the league brings in, it's going to be hard to reel it back, especially when some of this money at some point is going to be given to the players as part of a salary cap. You know, when that all gets ironed out, the cap is going to do nothing but go up. And for these reasons, there's so much money involved that sometimes decisions get compromised. And we've talked about it here on the show many times, that I always felt like when Paul Tagliabue was the commissioner and Gene Upshaw was the executive director of the NFLPA, that always the good of the game came at the end of most decisions. And I don't know that we can say that anymore. The good of the game has kind of been pushed aside, and revenues drive everything. And as we know, money changes certain things and aspects and agendas and everything else when it gets to this level, and it's a hard one.
What I do really enjoy though, Randy, is I love the odds and the numbers and all of that type of stuff, because there is obviously a value put on it that is fun to look at. And as we're sort of evaluating where teams rank in the pecking order, those, that type of structure of, you know, win totals or odds, I love it. I love to look through that. So what we've done here, certainly I don't think we were really on a gambling high horse, but if we were, we're dismounting that horse now, a moral high horse. We're getting off of that horse, and we're I sort of stacked in here this week, good idea from Randy, I think, let's just go through some of these you know, win totals or bets that we like or don't like, because I think there's a football conversation to be had around some of these either. And so if you can just envision here, if you're listening, I put down the kind of over under win totals. I think I pulled them from BetMGM. And so you could see, like, whatever, Cincinnati, Kansas City, and San Francisco 11.5, right? All the way down, I think it's Arizona, maybe Houston and Arizona at 5.5 for their win totals in a 17-game season. What ones stand out to you as potential values or bad values, and why?
Well, I think in for the listeners, just pretend somebody gave you $100 and said, hey, you got to wager on some NFL type, You know, it could be a prop bet. It could be an MVP bet. It could be a win total or win under or over. The first thing that jumped at my mind, if I was listing out best bets, I think the Green Bay Packers over 7.5 wins. For me, I had conviction that that's going to happen. I just think this is too good of a team. I think the Aaron Rodgers leaving narrative has taken hold of Vegas, and the 7.5 to me seems really low. I guess maybe I have more faith in Jordan Love. I have more faith in Matt LaFleur. I have more faith that this team, and you mapped it out for me, Mike, and when you picked all these or mentioned all the number one picks that they have on defense, this is a really talented team on both sides of the ball. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers did a lot of justice last year, to be honest with you. I think Jordan Love should be able to pick up the slack. I think he's going to be fine. And I just think at 7.5, I think the Packers are going to win 9 or 10 games. And so for me, the 7.5 would be an easy one where I would probably house a little money. And you know, I don't know. Low to me. And most of the time, I mean, we all know this is not earth-shattering. Vegas gets it, right? They know exactly. They know what they're doing. So that's my first one anyway.
So my counter to that would be that, yes, Aaron Rodgers had a bad season last year for whatever reason. I mean, maybe his mentally he wasn't all the way there. Certainly he hurt his thumb. Maybe he declined some. Whatever the reason, he wasn't a star last year like he had been in the past. Wasn't able to really lift them up like he has at other times. But I do think that Matt LaFleur coming in as kind of an offensive head coach without a lot of experience in a lot of big responsibility roles.
Yep, we talked
about it. I think he's very untested because I think when you have the superstar quarterback who really runs the show, you don't really worry as much about game management, running the 2-minute drill, when to call the timeouts, just running the offense in general. Now, there may be a little bit of a headache sometimes because Rodgers wants to do his own thing. But by and large, there's a little bit of an autopilot built in where Rodgers is really running a lot of the show. And I think that could be that LaFleur could be tested like he's never been tested before and evaluated and scrutinized as an offensive coach like he never has been before, because everything that's been about Rodgers, no one's really... other than after that game in the playoffs, you know, when they made a decision that Rodgers didn't like on whatever it was, 3rd and 8 or 4th and 8, whatever it was, you know, LaFleur got into the crosshairs a little bit. But I don't know if we know how good of an offensive coach he is. What do you think about that, or do you feel that he is good?
Well, I think he is. I agree with you. Somewhat untested, but this is year 4, right, for him?
Yeah.
So he has been through some battles. I agree a little bit with you that Aaron Rodgers always had the reins, so that was kind of a pretty good safety net for him. I think in year 4, you're a much better head coach than you were in year 1 or 2. Yeah. So I don't put a whole bunch of, you know, learning curve still as part of the issue with him. I do think his role has changed now, and he is the fall guy, and it is all on him. Same can be said for Joe Barry on defense. They've got to be better on defense. I agree with that. I just think it's a really talented team, and I think one that should be able to win, like I said, 9 or 10, but even if it's just 8.
8, you win the bet.
You win the bet. So, you know, I'm not looking to reinvent the wheel here. I'm just looking for a value where I might put a dollar or two, and that to me jumped out. I think there are a lot of factors involved with that. I think Minnesota, for one, is going to be less lucky. There's no way the Vikings can be as lucky as they were last year. So that rabbit's foot is playing out. I think Detroit is still a work in progress. I'm not ready to anoint and crown Detroit yet. I think there you might find a little bit of a learning curve still. I think that is one that I like Dan Campbell. I think he's a good coach, but there's some things that he's done in the past, clock management wise, and some of these other things that I don't know if we're over that hurdle yet. So I think those two things alone, and Chicago, I think Justin Fields is going to be better. I think they will be better because they're in the second year of a Luke Getsy offense. They're going to be better. But I just think Green Bay has too much talent for all those teams to just sit by the wayside. The other thing is, I think that the Aaron Rodgers narrative, saga, sideshow, three-ring circus hurt that team. That's just my opinion. And I think the McAfee, the whole management of his diatribe every week wore people out. That's just my opinion. I think it wore people out. And I don't think there's anybody in the management side that is sorry to see that go. Now, Jordan Love may not be Aaron Rodgers in the first 5 weeks of the season, but I think Aaron Rodgers wilted a little bit, 38, 39 years old, whatever he is and was. I just think Jordan Love might give them a little breath of fresh air, and I think we're going to be surprised. And I'm not saying the Packers are going to win a Super Bowl. I'm just saying they're going to win eight or more games.
Yeah, and before we get to you, you have another team you've circled here. I've got a couple here that just of note. One, just a 30,000-foot view, not too much into the weeds, but there's three teams that are kind of middle of the Packer 8.5 totals in Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Seattle. And I'm just looking at from the 30,000-foot view. That's John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, and Pete Carroll. And they're just – you kind of just put them down for 9 wins, even when things don't go great. Unless you're really overly concerned about they have a terrible quarterback situation. Like last season when Seattle went with Geno Smith and Drew Locke. I mean, look, it worked out great, but going into the year, you could have been worried that it could be really bad. But I feel like they've got at least, in Lamar Jackson, you have the potential to have an upper tier quarterback, and in Pittsburgh and Seattle, maybe you're middle. But with those coaches, like to me, I'd probably rather have above 8.5 than under. And they were probably around that last season anyway, above it. So I don't know what you think about that as a theory of just good coaches.
I like it a lot. I think you're right on with those calls. I think the Steelers for me are a team that at 8.5, I know this, he hasn't had an under 500 team yet, right? Last time I checked. Yeah. And I think Kenny Pickett in year two is going to be better than Kenny Pickett was in year one. I loved what they did in the draft. We've talked about it here on the show. I think the Steelers are an underplayed value as well. I think they would be one of my teams that if I had the other half of a dollar, I'd probably look at them as well. I think, you can say the Browns are going to be better. You can say Cincy's, Cincy. Yeah. But still, I think a Mike Tomlin coach team. And the reason I think you're on the right track with that is those coaches have lived the ups and downs of an NFL season. And it is a grind. It's longer than ever. It's 17 weeks plus the bye week. It is really hard to manage your team through the ups and downs, the thick and thin. Trust me, I've done it for years. It's really hard to keep the team on the rails. But Harbaugh, Tomlin, Pete Carroll, you're right. Every year we say, gosh, they need to fix something. And guess what? They fix it.
Yeah, and 8.5. Yeah, and 8.5 is not what we're used to. 8.5 on a 16 game season is a little different. On a 17, you give them an extra game here to get to 9. Yep. I sort of like that. What's the other team besides you mentioned Green Bay? What's the other one you got circled here?
The other team that I think is undervalued, that I think is reasonably priced, it's the Miami Dolphins at 9.5. Even I think Miami's going to be really good. I think they've continued to add on defense. Obviously, they got Jalen Ramsey. I think the additions that they've continued to make to an already really talented team on offense are good. Everybody always says now, well, it's just a matter of keeping Tua healthy. You know how I feel about Mike White. Tua may or may not be healthy, but I think they're better prepared and have insurance now against him going down. And I think they have a chance to move on if something were to happen to Tua. So I don't think they're putting all their eggs into one basket. I think that's just my feeling. I think the guy is an NFL quarterback. So I think they are prepared to go on. Plus now you have Vic Fangio on defense, who I don't care what you say, his defense is going to be good. It's going to be tested. They're going to be well-drilled. He's going to know exactly what he's asking of them, and they're going to know the same thing. I just like that setup. And I think I'm not ready to drink the Jets Kool-Aid that they're the greatest thing in the world at this point. I do think Buffalo is good. And I know everybody's saying the Buffalo window is closing. I don't know. They've doubled down, and we're going to talk about some of the signings that they've made. I don't think New England is as talented as they should be, can be, are thought to be. So I think that's a little bit of a struggle as well. So I just like the Dolphins. I wouldn't shock me at all if the Dolphins won 11 or 12 games.
Yeah, I had a couple teams that I wondered if the number was a little high that I might go on the lower side on. Even though Arizona's at 5.5, and as you had talked about before, we're sort of not even sure if Kyler Murray's going to play this year, right? And we know they're trying to set up for the future, and they have Colt McCoy, who's 11-25 as a starter over whatever 10 years or so. So he's won about 31%. So if we just apply that to 17 games times 31%, you're at 5.2. You're kind of on the low side, but I don't know that he can last a season. I think they could be playing somebody else. I see them as a likely, see if you think about this. Do you think they're a bottom eight team on both offense and defense? Do you think they are?
They are on offense for sure. I'd have to look a little closer at the defense, but I don't, you know.
They lost a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're a 5-win team. I guess to win a bet, they'd have to be a 6-win team. I don't see it either. So I'm concurring. Yeah. I'm with you.
So they may be better than that. If they're better than that on defense, good job, Jonathan Gannon, new defensive coach. But, you know, J.J. Watt's gone. A bunch of other, you know, some other guys are gone. So I just looked, hey, the last 15 years, there's 37 teams that are bottom eight on offense and defense. They average 3.4 wins. 33 of the 37 didn't win in a high enough percentage to go over 5.5. So that's just a place where, look, if they were under that, people might see it as good because they have all these draft picks and stuff. They could be in the market for whatever. This just doesn't feel like a year where they're really positioned. There's two other teams where the quarterback situations worry me. One is the Raiders. I think going from Derek Carr and Jarrett Stidham to Jimmy Garoppolo, Brian Hoyer, and Aiden O'Connell is really risky because Garoppolo doesn't make it through the whole season a lot. He's not even healthy necessarily now. They have a tough schedule, too. So the Raiders at 7.5, if Jimmy Garoppolo misses 6 or 7 games, which is really feasible, and you don't have a Mike White, right? You don't have even a Stidham. And then you have a team where the coach is trying to win over the locker room, right? I mean, some of these guys, Waller and these guys, wanted out of there or got out of there. So I could see that being a place that I might take the under of 7.5. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't dispute you on that. I think it is a risky spot right now. I think the Raiders have made some decisions that, for me, are somewhat questionable. And you mentioned the quarterback stuff. I don't think it's a matter of Jimmy G making it through 17 games. Does he ever do that?
No.
And let's just say he does. Do you have more faith in Josh McDaniels than Kyle Shanahan in calling the game as it's based on his skill set of Jimmy G at this point? I felt like for the last couple of years, Kyle Shanahan called a different game for Jimmy G that he had to protect and hold his you-know-whats all the time. Yeah. He had to call a game that was risk-free, certain things Jimmy didn't do well. You know, I thought Jimmy had kind of played out the string there, and Kyle couldn't wait, as we saw and heard a year ago, that he was out of there. It was only due to act of God that he came back and played at all last year because they had written him off. So they didn't think much of him the year before.
Right.
So I think, the Raiders have taken a step back. I agree with you. I think if the quarterback situation, and I think it's average at best, doesn't surprise people, I think you could see a 5 or 6 win team there as well. I agree.
It just possibly could. Yeah. The other one that I wondered about, even though they seem to do well anyway, there's three teams at 11.5 wins at the top. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, I got no problem. Yep. Kansas City, Pat Mahomes, no problem. San Francisco, 11.5. I wonder this, Randy, does their quarterback luck, I don't want to just say it's all luck because they scouted Brock Purdy and he looked pretty good when he was healthy, but does their luck, even saying it runs out is wrong because they had bad luck in the past with injuries. But you know what I mean? Is this this is a team that, you know, does the defense automatically stay great with D'Amico Ryans leaving? Was he a big part of that or no? They just reload and that's the way they do it. And then how many games is Purdy playing? What are the alternatives? Are you okay if Sam Darnold goes in or Trey Lance? Do you think they're still a 12-win team?
I got you. I am a little more bullish on them for two reasons. One, I am a Steve Wilks guy. I think his defense will be good. Okay. I think has enough skins on the wall and enough players in his fingertips that defense isn't going to miss a beat.
Okay.
I think on offense, I'm more of a Sam Darnold guy, I think, than probably most rank and file. I think Sam Darnold is very functional. I think Kyle Shanahan's offense suits him well. I can make a case for why Sam Darnold, in my opinion, I'm not saying I'm right, in my opinion, why it failed in Carolina. So I feel okay about that. The Trey Lance part of it, to me, is just a mystery, and I don't think anybody's counting on him at all. I don't think Kyle Shanahan's counting on him. That's just the facts.
Yeah,
so I think that if he was pinned in a corner right now, his two quarterbacks would be Purdy and Sam Darnold. And if Trey Lance comes through, that's a bonus, right? I mean, let's face it, we don't have enough information to make that call. So I think the 49ers are still going to be good. I don't have that same doubt that their luck will run out. I think they've, you know, I think there's still room to improve. And they were held back somewhat in some certain areas. And I think this year should be a good year for them. Now, I think the Rams have taken a big step back. I always go back to the competition within their own league, right? Rams bad, Arizona bad, Seattle average, maybe a little above average. You know, let's say they go through the division and they're 5-1. You know, who's going to beat them? Maybe Seattle beats them one time. So I think that's a big plus. So
You're right. I feel it's such a good testament to not only their building of their defense, but Kyle Shanahan as well. Because if you look at these teams at the top and who they're quarterbacked by, top of the win totals, Burrow, Mahomes, we talked about San Francisco, Josh Allen, Hurts, Herbert, Carr, Rodgers, Dak, Trevor Lawrence, and then Miami, who's kind of schemed nicely and has great talent, to have just sort of a, maybe it'll be Purdy. It could be Sam Darnold. You know, we're just not really sure. And then we can make a strong case like you just did that we feel good about it. Doesn't that say something?
Yeah, it says they kind of know what they're doing. I think you can reverse it as well when you just talk about the quarterbacks and look at the bottom seven or eight teams in that win total. And every one of those teams, in my opinion, is almost irrelevant because of the quarterback.
Yeah, you're right. We got Sam Howell. We got Minshew.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Richardson Brady plays. Retires and Tampa Bay's a 6.5 on the
Baker
on the
Baker Mayfield
total.
Is starting.
Again, I like Baker, but they're irrelevant now. Yeah. The Colts, they're kind of irrelevant now. I mean, as talented as they are, they still are going to, looks like, go with a rookie quarterback. Yeah. The Commanders are irrelevant, in my opinion. I mean, Sam Howell, you just said it. No chance. I'm not buying that, you know.
Yeah.
The Texans, you know, they don't have anybody now, but they drafted C.J. Stroud. They're down with Arizona, who has no legitimate quarterback that's going to make everybody's play rise.
Yeah.
And so those are the teams at the bottom that I just think how fast you can go from the top to the bottom and be irrelevant if you don't have a legitimate quarterback.
Houston, after 3 years of the same GM with drafting a top two quarterback, has the same win set total as Arizona, which has Kyler Murray not playing and a new regime with nothing. I mean, it's amazing. Like, it's just amazing to me. So,
well, they're on their third head coach. What does that tell you?
Yeah, right. So who knows? We'll see what they do.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Okay, we got a few more notes and newsy little nuggets here. DeAndre Hopkins, remember him? Remember the frenzy when he was released? My gosh, here's the top five places he could go. He is paying a free agent visit to the Titans. And I said, Randy, yes, the good old free, you're smiling, the old, good old free agent visit. This used to be a thing in free agency where players would take visits to possibly create a market, or maybe they were serious. You really weren't sure. But hey, did you hear? The personnel notice came out, the waiver wire came out. Hey, so and so brought in such and such for a visit. Wow, the mystery of the visit, Randy. We can talk about Hopkins to the Titans and the visit, but we can talk about visits too.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It did bring a smile to my face when I heard he was going to take a visit, because you're right. It's a dying exercise, right? It's like the fullback. It's gone the way of a lot of things that we all love in football. And having run front offices in other places, free agent visits were a big thing. back in the day when this started out, we would have the likes of Kenny G, who's a Seattleite. He produced a video and a sax whole scene for recording the great virtues of Seattle in the area.
Come on. Why, for a free agent visit?
Yes, why it would be a great opportunity for someone to come. And all the Pacific Northwest facts. He did a video in a suite in the Kingdom for us to entice these. And we make these free agent visits video. Start with, we would give them a tape that they would watch it in their hotel room. We'd have it all set
up. A hype tape? A Kenny G hype tape?
Yeah. For free agency? I'm telling you, it was a big deal. And these visits don't happen anymore because it is all about money for the most case. So,
Do you think Tom Fermstead would have that video? Tom Fermstead was the old video guy for the CIA. Where can we get that video? I mean, that would be awesome.
Probably in my garage in a box. I mean, that's how we kept it all. They were pretty cool, actually.
VHS, probably?
VHS, 100%. Yeah. We didn't have beta back in those days. So, hey, I like the fact that they're connecting a few dots here. They're recruiting. You know, Mike Vrabel was in Houston when DeAndre Hopkins was there. So connect a few of those dots. They have $8 million in salary cap space. Last time I checked, they've got some room to make a deal like this. And guess what? If he went there, he'd be their best, most accomplished receiver right now. So there is a case to be made for Tennessee to be a great spot for DeAndre Hopkins. Now, like you said, maybe he's going there with the idea he's got to press some levers somewhere else that this gets the ball rolling there. But if I'm Tennessee and I really want this guy, I may roll out the red carpet for DeAndre Hopkins and not only do the hype video, but the check across the boardroom table, the whole bit, and not let him leave town, because I think he could make a difference for them and he may be a great fit.
So I was going to ask you, too, because I feel like the way the Titans went late last season and just the way sort of everything is, it kind of feels like we're, you know, putting dirt on them a little bit, right? It was a tough ending, and is it the end of this little window they've had where they've been, a pretty good team and really beaten expectations? I just want to ask you a question. Do you think that Ryan Tannehill's kind of done, or do you think with a Hopkins, with enough around him, that he can still be fine?
Well, I think he can be functional. I think he can be a playoff quarterback. I don't know what they do long term because this is the last year of his deal. The hard part for me is getting this statement out of my mind. When they questioned Mike Vrabel last year so many times about, are you guys ever going to throw the ball? Are we ever going to get it downfield? Are we going to just run this, you know, right into the ground? And you remember what his comment was?
Yeah,
who do you want us to throw it to? That was, he was insinuating that they had no receivers. So that was his comeback to the player, to the reporter. Was who do you want us to throw it to? We have nobody. So maybe this had a lot to do with, you know, obviously their GM lost his job during last season as well. Questionable things team building wise, that draft a quarterback in the third round that is a year away from a year away who might be another year away. You know, those kind of moves set you back. And their receiving core, to me, was subpar. And it was, we make fun of the fact that they're thrown to a bunch of neighbor kids on this podcast in the past, but they had a lot of neighbor kids, and I like Burks. I think Burks is going to be a decent player, but I do think Hopkins would be a really good guy to fit with him for right now for what's available. I like the idea of these teams being aggressive in June, still trying to build their team, still trying to build some depth somewhat, but this is a frontline player who he may not be the number one receiver that he was for a long part of his career, but, you know, we broke down the film last week on the podcast, and I still think there's some tread left on the tire. So I like the fact that he's making the visit. Of course, I like the visits themselves. I'll be honest with you, Mike. This was a chance for me as a GM to include the whole staff in these visits. We would have people making gift baskets. We would have, it was old school, man. I mean, we did it all. We would send flowers to the wife back home. We would take care of, send her a care package. We would do everything like the colleges. You know, they were always limited a little bit by budget back in the day or by rules. We could recruit and could pay. So we had no rules, no money, no budget for anything. We could actually pay and buy players. And this just helped us along the way. I know it got us some players in Seattle who at that point, you know, late 80s, early 90s, people thought we were in Anchorage, right? So we had to go out of our way to get people's attention. I'm surprised more teams don't do that, but the NFL has gained a lot of footing since then too.
Nashville has a lot better musical options too, a lot more than I mean, no offense to Kenny G, you know, excellent talent.
Well, back in the 90s, Kenny G was big, you're right. There are a lot of things going, and Nashville is a hot, fancy, fast-growing city, especially for younger money.
You know, my son plays the saxophone. His girlfriend got him, and we live in the Seattle area, got him a ticket to go see Kenny G like this year.
Oh,
and
really?
And he comes out and he plays. I guess I don't know a lot about playing the saxophone, but apparently, like, some guys can play and then be inhaling while they're playing, so they could play continuously. So he comes out and he plays for like 4 minutes exactly straight, like, or wow, 5 minutes straight. And he's walking up and down these stairs and all over the place. Oh. And then my son had one of those, I guess there's an app on your phone where you can measure the integrity of a note. Like, it's hard to hold a note for an extended period of time in music, apparently, right?
Right.
And he was holding it like exactly, you know, for like the longest period of time. So it's kind of ended up being kind of a fun night. There's some division in the saxophone world over over how great Kenny G actually is.
Really?
Actually a thing. Yeah, there's some stuff.
Well, were we trying to say he's Milli Vanilli or what? Well, what's the equivalent of a sax player?
I don't think the players you were bringing in, you know, would maybe necessarily know all of those.
Well, they did back then. Yeah, back then he was riding high. Yeah, Kenny G was maybe not high. Now.
He's great. I love that little tidbit. So, hey, one move that did get made was Leonard Floyd going to the Bills. He had been released by the Rams. I had 9 sacks last season for the Rams. Mm-hmm. He signed after June, which doesn't really matter in the free agency comp pick equation because he was a released player. He wasn't an unrestricted free agent. Technically, his contract didn't expire. But does this move the needle for you on Buffalo, a team that, you know, like you said, some are perceiving to have their window closing a little bit here?
Well, you know how I am with these veteran signings. I like it. We've talked about it here on the show. I love the fact that this is a little insurance against maybe something happening with Von Miller. But if not, you're talking about two guys on the edge that can surely go get the passer. I just think Brandon Bean is doing his job every day, and I like that. I like these teams that are still grinding, trying to find these players. I think, like you said, if Leonard Floyd is healthy, his numbers speak for themselves. He's got some impressive numbers.
Yeah, he does. He has 29 sacks over the past 3 years. That's 10th in the league. The guys ahead of him, you've heard of them, Myles Garrett, T.J. Watt, Hassan Reddick, Trey Hendrickson, Matt Judon, Nick Bosa, Chris Jones, Aaron Donald, and Brian Burns. So not really bad company. And then, by the way, I saw another note this week. Von Miller could be back for week 1, so maybe they bring him along slowly, the luxury at that position, right, Randy? You can mix him in, get him a certain amount of reps, put him in some packages. But on paper, having Leonard Floyd with Von Miller isn't a bad thing.
Not a bad thing, especially when you double down with the signing of Ed Oliver to a, like you said, 4-year, $64 million deal. So,
do you like that deal? Yeah.
I like it. I do like it because I think it's again, you cannot find Ed Olivers. They don't grow on trees. Defensive linemen are valuable. And this is a big dude that can play the run, play the pass. Not only that, he was going to enter into his last year of a deal. They could have used a tag on him next year. And I think that number right now is like $18 million. This deal's better than that for both parties because you can really plan now. You know how when you sign these big money deals, you can plan your cap out. I think he's a really good player. And again, this clearly shows that they value these defensive linemen. They took some criticism from some analysts by letting Edmonds, the linebacker, go to Chicago. I can understand that if you view him strictly as an inside linebacker. I've said all along, I think he could be a better pass rusher than they used him. But again, I think what Buffalo is doing with kind of keeping all their talent as they can there, adding to it. I guess my question to you is because Sean McDermott now the focal point or the focal, you know, the driver of that defense, does this mean anything different to you that they are spending this money on defense? Would they have done this if Leslie Frazier was in charge as well? Or is this a kind of a, hey, let's load up on defense now? It's just the time, place, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of have perceived McDermott to probably be the driver anyway, even though Leslie Frazier was it on game day. Like, as the head coach, I would think he would have a real, you know, but maybe it's a more direct voice on it, or a more unfiltered one, or just a direct one from him. So going to be interesting to see, because that defense, you know, at critical times, that's what we really want to see this year, right, Randy? At the critical times, how they come through with the game on the line. They're probably going to be pretty good during the regular season.
I think what it tells me is they were going to be worse without Ed Oliver, for sure. They were going to take a step back no matter how they decided. If he wasn't going to be there a year from now, this solidifies that. I think Von Miller's deal makes him somewhat, you know, tied there for the next year or two. The back end of that deal, the stakes are really high, and who knows how long they'll be there. But it gives them a window of 1 or 2 years here to keep their best players. And let's make a run. Let's load up. Let's even raise the expectations. Let's don't say the window is closing. Let's add to it. And this, I like the philosophy of keeping our best players.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I can't remember. Is there, do we have anything in the GM notebook this week? Or do we,
kind we do of not. We don't have a GM notebook this week.
Yeah, that's the we'll close on this. I thought one of the last headlines was this former Vikings minority owner Reggie Fowler gets a 6-year jail term. And one of the great things, one of the things I loved about doing this podcast with you, Randy, is like that almost everybody or everything you know or you have a connection with. And so Reggie Fowler had been, he's basically being sentenced, for 6-year sentence for a crypto scheme that misled the Alliance of American Football into thinking his worth was much greater. He was a backer of the Alliance. And of course, you were with the Houston franchise, right? Salt Lake franchise.
Yes.
Salt Lake franchise of the Alliance. And so when I saw this headline, I thought, oh, I wonder if Randy's got any Fowler stories. what do you got?
Well, I saw this note too, and I would gladly talk about it. I did get to know Reggie. I don't know the nuances of this case. I don't know the reasons he's going to jail. I have no idea what that's all about. But my association with Reggie was that of very positive, and I thought it was a unique story in that, yes, he was an investor in the AAF. He came up with some money at a time when the AAF needed some money. And one of his tasks were that, yes, we had the Salt Lake team in Salt Lake, and we had no facilities. We didn't have any place that anybody really wanted us. The University of Utah didn't really want to share anything with a spring league team. Yeah. It was a tough spot for us just because we weren't really the most welcome people in town, right, in Salt Lake. So it was a little bit of a reach for us. But Reggie came to the forefront in that he had an idea, and he worked with the AAF. And so he, as an investor, he kind of looked out for a couple teams, and we were one of his teams. He said, let me take care of your facilities. What he did was we rented, I want to say it's almost like a warehouse in a strip mall. And what he did was he bought ship containers from LA that had come empty and were sitting abandoned in some shipyard in LA, had them shipped to Salt Lake, and built in these ship containers locker rooms, showers, weightlifting facilities. Picture within this warehouse are these ship containers inside the warehouse. And then inside the shipping containers were little meeting rooms, were little all kinds of crazy venue. It's the most unique setup I'd ever seen. And when they gave me this idea, he said, bear with me. I said, I'm thinking to myself, this guy's nuts. There's no way this can happen. This is a football team. You know, we're not. He pulled it off. Now, my question I had is, when the AAF folded, what happened to all the ship containers and the setup for an office? It wasn't our office, but it was the home for the players' dressing rooms. It was a weight room facility. It was showers. It was like a bunch of trailers inside a warehouse. I don't know if I'm doing it justice by breaking it down, but
it's great because I think those facilities actually beat a few of the NFL teams in the player poll for the best facilities. So good work there.
I think he did the whole thing for an unbelievable cheap amount, and it actually worked for us. So that's my Reggie Fowler connection, and he may be, you know, going to jail for something that I have no idea about. But my association with him was that one of positive that, hey, he bailed us out of Salt Lake in a spring league where we had no chance to even take a shower and change. We were looking for locker rooms.
Isn't that the charm, though, of some of these upstart leagues? I misspoke earlier that you were in Houston, but that was with the XFL, right?
Yeah, right.
The XFL,
that's correct.
Houston. But, you know, each one of these places, you know, you're in it for the team building and the football and the challenge of it. And as long as it's a somewhat equal playing field, you know, you're in. But the playing fields aren't equal, and each one of these situations is different. And I remember when you were with the Seahawks, and they were going to try to relocate the team to LA, and you're doing free agency out of an elementary school parking lot, or, you know, these are just sort of the
trunk of a car.
Exactly. These are the stories that you know, make it that really humanize all of this. So that's great. I wonder where those are. I mean, I don't know.
Kind of funny. Next time I talk to Bill Polian, I'm going to ask him, because he was the one that was really the commissioner in the AAF.
He
apologized to me after the season. He said, "We gave you no chance in Salt Lake." He said, "I understand that." And we built a 500-ish type team, but you're right. Facilities aren't equal. Things weren't equal. But people learned from that, and that's why the XFL last year, the 3.0 version of it, was in Dallas, where everybody trained, and it was fairly equal. So it does mean something. You're right.
If you can get a hold of that thing, I mean, my boys are getting to be the age they could use an apartment or something. Maybe we could rent out, lease out that container.
My guess is the rent probably didn't get paid, so the landlord in that strip mall owns these, and there might be in his backyard or some vacant lot in East Salt Lake or something. You know?
That's great. That's really good. Love it. Love it. Well, hey, you get it all here on the Football GM podcast. We get a little golf. We get some facilities in a
shipping containers.
Shipping containers. I mean, the whole thing. So that's what we got. If you want to find my work or Randy Mueller's work, you can certainly find it at The Athletic. And then on Twitter, Randy's at @RandyMueller_. I'm at @SandoNFL. I think we'll talk to you next week. I'm going to take a trip through some training camps or some mandatory camps next week. And I think that'll be our last show probably until we get going for training camp. So
I look forward to it.
One more of these. It'll be, it's been great, and it will continue to be. We'll talk to everybody next time.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.